hitting the glass ceiling. That's the expression that we use when we feel stuck, when society imposes limits on us that we just can't seem to break through. Women, people of color, those with disabilities, and the poor, they know this feeling particularly well. It's like you can see everybody else moving up past you, but you're left trapped on the outside, peeking in through the window at everybody else. Maybe you felt that way before. You know, there's a glass ceiling in first century Palestine, too. Able-bodied, ethnically Jewish men, especially those men with an education, they quickly climb the ladder in their society. Now, of course, even those guys can't climb too high because the Roman overlords are always sitting on the top. But if you're somebody different, like a person with a disability, or someone who's not ethnically Jewish, or a female, then good luck even trying. You won't even be allowed to get close to that ladder. In fact, you're actively excluded from the heart of the Jewish worshiping community because of factors you can do absolutely nothing to change. To make matters worse, people who are higher up look down on you. They believe that you're ceremonially unclean, so they keep a certain distance away from you, lest you contaminate their purity. You're forbidden from even entering past the outer courts of God's temple in Jerusalem, so there is literally a wall between you and God. You're made to feel ashamed of who you are. Other people believe that you should be isolated because God wants it that way. Except Jesus proves that God does not want it that way, not at all. In fact, Jesus makes it his mission to break those dividing walls down. In our gospel text this morning in Mark 2, we see Jesus' followers learning how to smash through the glass ceiling. Except that in their cultural context, this looks like digging up the roof. Last week, Pastor Kendall began our fall series on Mark by talking about the beginning of Jesus' ministry. And if you missed it, you can still catch it on our church website. Already by the second chapter of Mark, Jesus is well into his ministry. He's traveling around Galilee proclaiming God's good news. By the time Jesus returns to hang out at a friend's house in Capernaum, he's already popular enough to draw a large crowd. Now imagine for a second how you would feel if a super famous celebrity came to hang out at your place for a few days. Does anybody remember how thick the crowd was in Leamington this summer on Canada Day when Justin Trudeau came to town? You couldn't even get close to him. We were so packed in with people. Imagine having that happen at your house. The text says that so many people gathered around that there was no room for them in the house. A thick crowd was pressing in, trying to hear what Jesus had to say. Their bodies physically blocked the doorway, so it was impossible for newcomers to even get close. Now, it's important to note here what kind of people made up this crowd. They weren't the educated leaders. They were the rabble. Bible scholars note that the word for crowd used here is a very particular word, the same word that was used to describe the rank and file soldiers, not the officers at the top giving the orders, but the low-level guys at the bottom, the grunts who get sent into the cannon fire first. So this crowd was made up of ordinary, average Joe types, people who felt disenfranchised and disempowered, people who felt like they didn't have a voice into the politics that was going on at their time. These were the people who were drawn to Jesus. Except that these average Joe types were also the same people who the religious leaders, the scribes and the Pharisees, were trying to control. The Pharisees had political power because they had leadership over the common people. So whatever weakened the hold the Pharisees had over the crowds was also a threat to their political power. And then along comes Jesus, drawing the crowds to him, crowds of ordinary people, with this strange new teaching of inclusion that was so unlike anything they had ever heard. Now, the paralyzed man in Mark 2 was different from the rest of the crowd. He didn't walk to the house to come and see Jesus. He had to be carried there with the help of his friends. The crowds may have felt disempowered, but the paralyzed man felt cursed by God. Even the average Joe types look down on somebody like that, somebody with a physical disability, because they believe that his own sinful choices must have brought God's wrath upon himself. They believed God wouldn't have let something as awful as paralysis happen to a good person. He must have done something bad to deserve it. He must have been cursed by God because of some sort of sin in his life. That's what they thought. But this man's friends know that's a lie. They love their friend, and they love him enough to fight for him. They managed to push through the crowd and to get up onto the roof of the house, carrying their friend with them the whole time, even up the stairs. They love this guy enough to take the risk of violating somebody else's personal property by digging up the roof so that they can make a hole to lower their friend down and meet Jesus. They somehow have this strange idea that if they can only just get their buddy to Jesus, everything else will turn out okay. And they're correct. The friends refuse to believe the lie that God has closed the door on the man they love. And their friendship drives them to dig through the roof, to literally take down the barrier that's separating their friend from God. And Jesus affirms their faith. He heals their friend. Jesus states that this man's sins are forgiven. Now, these words seem simple and easy enough to say, but they're loaded with deep significance that it's easy for us to miss in our 21st century culture. Jesus' words of forgiveness are words that welcome this man back into the community. Remember, the crowds believe that his sin has cut him off from a relationship with God. But Jesus restores that relationship. This guy is forgiven. He can no longer be discriminated against because of his illness, because Jesus makes it clear that whatever sin may have been there is gone now. There's no longer any basis upon which for him to be excluded. Now, of course, this does not make the religious leaders happy. The power structure of the Pharisees is based upon a complex system of rules detailing who's in and who's out. That's how they maintain their control over the population. The fear of being cut out of the community is enough to keep the people in check. If nobody's afraid of being excluded, then the Pharisees have no power. So they're not going to be happy about Jesus messing up their system. And then Jesus goes the extra mile. He gives physical healing to this man too. So the guy gets up, he picks up his mat, and he walks home. The crowd is shocked. They've never seen anything remotely like this. Now, when you hear this story, what character do you identify with? Are you the paralyzed man being lowered down on your mat? Are you the friend holding the rope? Maybe you're the owner of the house who's worried about how you're going to fix the hole in your roof. Or maybe you're the Pharisee anxious about how God is messing up all of the plans you've worked so hard to carefully craft. Who do you connect with in this story? You know, reflecting on this story, I have to wonder, what are the barriers in our community that come between people and God? In Mark 2, there's a roof that needs to be dug up. What might those barriers be for us here today? They might be hard for us to see, simply because we're so used to them being there that they're hard to notice. We don't see them anymore until we smack right up against them. What might be the barriers that keep people from connecting with God in our community? And how might God be inviting us to break those things down? At one time in our church's past, language was one of those barriers, a barrier that kept people out. If you couldn't speak German, you would have had a great difficulty being part of this church. The leadership of women here was another barrier. At one time, people here believed that women couldn't preach a sermon or lead worship. And in some churches today, people still believe those things. Now, here today, those barriers have been broken down, so they're easy for us to see in retrospect. But what invisible barriers might still be present in our church that are harder for us to see? Perhaps you feel like there is a barrier in your own life that's standing between you and God. Maybe that's because of a painful experience that you've had, or an unanswered prayer, or a significant loss. When you listen to the story of the paralyzed man being healed by Jesus, what is it that you hear? How do you hear God speaking to you through this story? I'd like to invite you to enter into a time of listening prayer this morning to reflect on this story. I invite you to ask what it is that God might be speaking into your heart this morning. So we'll spend 2 minutes together in silence. And during that time, you're free to listen. Listen for God's voice about how God might be speaking to you. Who do you connect with in this story? Where do you find yourself at? And at the end of that time of silence, we'll enter into the Lord's Prayer together. So I invite you now into that time of silence to hear what God is speaking to you. Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as
trespass against us, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory,